when we look at the historical texts, whether they are found in the Shia school of thought or the Sunni school of thought, and even when we look at the historical texts or the commentaries and biographies written by non-Muslims, we find that beyond a doubt, Imam Ali was the most generous and the most honest man after the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Now, how can we say that Imam Ali was the most generous and the most honest man? Well, as regards to being the most generous, the highest degree of generosity is to offer one's life. And Imam Ali, peace and blessings upon him, as has been written in the historical texts, we find that by lying and sleeping in the bed of the Holy Prophet on Laylat al-Mabit, the night where the Holy Prophet migrated towards Medina, Imam Ali sacrificed his life for the sake of the Messenger of Allah in order to save the Holy Prophet Muhammad. The historian Ibn Athir reports that the Quranic verse in chapter number 2, verse 207, which says, "And among men is he who sells himself to seek the pleasure of Allah," was revealed about Imam Ali when the Holy Prophet left Mecca for Medina. And it was at this time that the Holy Prophet asked Imam Ali if he would lie and sleep in his bed in order to be able to escape. And so here we find that when he gave up his life, when he sacrificed his life, Imam Ali was the most generous man. And when it comes to the most honest man, we find that the Holy Prophet asked Imam Ali on the next day to transfer the people's trust which had been entrusted to the Holy Prophet Muhammad. And so, truly, a profound lesson talking about generosity and honesty, which we should both inculcate into our lives, brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Ali Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, about the personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
تمام ارزش ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
Thank you. Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi talks about the personality of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Today, I would like to focus on examples from non-Muslims who admire the sermons of Amir al-Mu'mineen, especially when it comes to Nahj al-Balagha. And we are talking about the non-Muslims of the present day. A third example, as far as, you know, non-Muslim entity is concerned, those who appreciated the wisdom of Amir al-Mu'mineen even after 14 centuries is the United Nations Organization. In the year 2002, UN actually issued a report regarding the Middle East. The title was Liberating Human Capabilities, and the subtitle of that report is Governance, Human Development, and the Arab World. So they have a survey of, you know, how the Arab societies work, and then they have solutions there, recommendations of what they should do. And just so that the Arabs don't feel bad about it, that, you know, UN is saying we should follow the example of the West, they actually say you don't need to go here and there for the example. They said you go back to your own history and look at the example of your Caliph Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salatu wasalam. It's irony that the Arab world is being told to follow the example of Ali by United Nations. And in that actually report, in one area, they have a box where they have actually actual excerpts from the letter that Amir al-Mu'mineen wrote to Malik Ashtar about, you know, the principles of governance. Of course, they haven't put everything there, but main important points there. And so this is important to realize that even now, when people look at the history of Islam, you know, the example of Amir al-Mu'mineen, his words, his ideas, and his example basically is still a guidance and light for the people in the modern times. And this is what I would say, you know, this is a challenge for us, the Shias. Shouldn't we be ahead of all others in studying Nahj al-Balagha? Think about it.
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Reporters. the Islamic Jihad movement and the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine held a sit-in in solidarity with thousands of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails. The event took place near the Israeli-controlled Erez crossing in northern Gaza. The move comes as thousands of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to suffer from inhumane treatment and are being denied their basic rights. The Israeli regime has imprisoned nearly 1 million Palestinians since 1967. Many Palestinian prisoners suffer from chronic illnesses and are denied proper medical treatment by Israel's prison service, who runs Israeli prisons.
The Islamic Jihad and the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine came together today to express solidarity with the prisoners who are languishing in Israeli jails. The conditions of prisoners are only getting worse as days go by under the watchful eye of the international community.
Palestinian prisoners are subjected to degrading conditions, including administrative detention, solitary confinement, and bans on family visits. Palestinians say that Arab countries normalizing relations with the Israeli regime are encouraging Tel Aviv to violate the rights of Palestinians.
The normalization by Arab regimes has badly affected the conditions of Palestinian prisoners. Normalization of ties with the Zionists is a betrayal of Palestine and the Palestinian prisoners. All Arabs must understand that the United States and Israel are the enemies of the Arab and Muslim nations.
Securing the release of prisoners is a highly emotive issue for Palestinians who regard them as prisoners of war and as symbols of resistance against Israeli occupation. The Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, PFLP, vowed to use all forms of resistance to free Palestinian prisoners.
The so-called peace deals will not free Palestinian prisoners. Only resistance can free Palestinian prisoners from Zionist jails. Capturing more Israeli soldiers to exchange them with Palestinian prisoners must be a top priority for all Palestinian resistance groups.
Statistics show that over 200 Palestinian detainees have died in Israeli prisons since 1967 due to medical negligence.
According to prisoners' advocacy groups, Israel is currently holding some 5,000 Palestinians behind bars, including women and children. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The Yemeni army says two of its drones hit Jizan Airport and King Khalid Air Base, both in southwestern Saudi Arabia. The army says this is part of intensified attacks to retaliate Riyadh's ongoing war on Yemen.
We are entitled to carry out the attacks as part of our normal and legitimate right to respond to the escalation of Saudi Arabia and its comprehensive blockade on our country. And we promise the Saudi regime more painful operations as long as the aggression and siege continues.
His comments come as over the past months, Saudi Arabia has either roundly denied any Yemeni attacks inside the country or claimed Yemeni missiles and drones were intercepted before making impact.
The Saudi regime realizes that it may lose face if people of the country come to know about the Yemeni attacks. The Saudi regime is controlling its people by force and it is afraid of an internal revolution against the ruling regime. So, this is why Riyadh continues to avoid talking about the Yemeni attacks.
Military experts say the Yemeni army is well capable of expanding its attacks to a wider range of targets to make them more painful for Riyadh. They say this could inflict greater damage to Saudi Arabia economically and militarily.
Saudi Arabia must realize that the painful phase is yet to come. Saudi Arabia will lose its economic power and military capabilities in this phase. Saudi Arabia says its army is the sixth most powerful army in the world, but 6 years of war on Yemen have proven that the Saudi army is extremely weak and has achieved nothing, while the Yemeni military capabilities have increased. And I believe that the continuation of this war is further damaging to the kingdom.
The Yemeni army's escalation of retaliatory attacks is a response to the deadly Saudi-led aggression and siege that caused the deaths of tens of thousands of people, many of them women and the children.
Saudi Arabia has been calling for peace talks with Yemeni forces to stop their attacks while refusing to grant their demand to end its years-long war and siege on Yemen. This leaves the Yemeni army no option but to step up its retaliatory attacks against the kingdom. عبد اللطيف الوشلي صنعاء.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky held talks with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan in Istanbul. The visit comes amid tensions between Kiev and Moscow over Ukraine's eastern Donbas region. Meanwhile, Russia bulked up its military presence on Ukraine's eastern border, threatening military action. During the meeting, the two presidents spoke about ways of cooperation in different sectors and strengthening ties between the two countries, including free trade, tourism, and sports. Following the meeting, which was also attended by ministers from both sides, a number of agreements were signed.
Turkey strongly defends the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Ukraine. We hope that the escalation in eastern Ukraine will come to an end and the conflict will be resolved through dialogue based on the Minsk agreement.
The United States, after informing Turkey as per the Montreux Convention, sent two warships through Turkish straits towards the Black Sea. Turkish Foreign Ministry said the warships will stay in the Black Sea until May 4.
The tension between Russia and Ukraine is increasing every minute. Ukraine is waiting for support from the EU and the US. But Russia has clearly expressed that Crimea is its red line and will not give it to Ukraine. I think this visit is aimed at sorting things out. Ukraine wants to make sure that Turkey is on its side, especially after the phone call between Turkish and Russian presidents.
Late on Friday, Russian President Vladimir Putin discussed with his Turkish counterpart over the phone the Ukraine crisis and the presence of U.S. warships in the Black Sea. Turkish president assured that Ankara's cooperation with Ukraine does not mean it is against Russia. Analysts believe Turkey is trying to play the role of peacemaker in the region without taking sides. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
It was an utter shock for the destitute Rohingya community in India after the country's Supreme Court rejected the petition seeking halt on the deportation process. The court in its ruling said the deportation process could go ahead as long as the government follows due process. Now more panic has gripped the community as their last hope seems lost. Experts say the Supreme Court ruling will give a sense of relief to the community for a while from being deported instantly. They, however, believe the ruling doesn't stop the detention process. Rather, it gives government more freedom to act swiftly. Legal experts are shocked about the judgment, saying the country has welcomed refugees from several countries since decades, but adopted a hostile approach towards Rohingya in particular. India has no legislation on the refugees, and it considers Rohingya as illegal immigrants and a threat to national security.
They can be deported in accordance with the law. Now, which law? Law, according to the government, means the Foreigners Act. Now, Foreigners Act doesn't deal with refugees. Refugees are a different category of people. We had argued that even non-citizens, even refugees, have Article 21 rights, the right to life.
In recent weeks, dozens or more refugees were detained from New Delhi. The police maintains they have orders from higher authorities to carry detention process. Now grief has befallen the destitute community. Rights activists say treating these refugees differently is a blow on India's ethos of Vasudeva Kutumbakam, which means the world is one family.
Why is it not our concern if there are refugees coming from there? It's not just the refugee law. There are so many laws dealing with the rights of children, the Human Rights Convention, the Civil and Political Rights Convention. They all talk about the principle of non-refoulement, which means that you cannot send somebody to a country or outside your territory where there will be danger to his life or limb.
Anti-Rohingya sentiments have risen since the emergence of Hindu nationalist government of BJP in 2014. Since then, many anti-Rohingya campaigns and Hindu groups have been demanding their expulsion. Minority Rohingya Muslims have for decades fled to neighboring Bangladesh and other countries, including India, escaping genocide in their country. Munawar Zaman in the outskirts of New Delhi.
As the fourth wave of the coronavirus hits Iran,
the country goes under another nationwide lockdown. From Saturday on, for at least 10 days, travel to and from high-risk cities will be banned, and non-essential businesses have to roll down their shutters. Schools, entertainment centers, and all public places will also be closed. Officials have avoided a total lockdown in Tehran, arguing that the capital city accommodates major national and international activities. The closures come amid a new wave of infections across Iran, which is believed to be the UK variant of COVID-19, entering the country from neighboring Iraq.
The first reason why our hospitals are once again overwhelmed with COVID-19 patients is the fact that British variant of the virus slipped into our country through our Khuzestan and Iran borders with Iraq. Now we are unfortunately faced with a fourth wave of the pandemic.
Authorities blame the new spike on the two-week traveling spree during the Persian New Year holidays, which started on March 21st. The number of confirmed coronavirus cases in Iran has passed the 2 million mark, and the total fatalities have surpassed 64,000. Vaccination of the most vulnerable groups of the society is underway in Iran with Russian-made Sputnik V vaccine. But the country is yet to launch a nationwide vaccination program. The government hopes to kickstart mass inoculation in 2 months, using its own homegrown jabs.
While vaccines have also come in the ring to join the fight against COVID-19, the virus is still hard to knock out. Health officials advise everyone to take the new restrictions seriously. As they say, chances of survival are much lower for those who get infected with the UK variant of the coronavirus. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Dates, one of the fruits of paradise in Islamic tradition. With their paper-thin skin and juicy, sweet flesh, they have pride of place, especially on Muslim dinner tables.
Walking to any halal shop or indeed any supermarket here in the UK, and you're bound to see dates on display. They come from many different places, including from Palestinian territories. And during Ramadan, they simply fly off the shelf. But could the Muslims living here in Britain, by taking dates to break their fast during the holy month, be unknowingly supporting the brutal Israeli occupation of Palestinians?
We put that question to the head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, an NGO running a campaign to boycott Israeli dates in the UK, now Israel's third target market.
They were breaking their fast on a date which is being grown on stolen land, which is actually even unlawful, to break your fast with something which is haram.
Israel is one of the world's top five exporters of dates. In 2018, the UK was Israel's largest market for dates worth more than $25 million. Over half of those are grown in illegal settlements, ruled by the United Nations, the International Court of Justice, and several other international organizations as illegal and built on stolen Palestinian land. Not only that, Israeli settlers are set to employ low-paid Palestinian laborers, among them children, to do the back-breaking job of picking the dates. But how are Muslims and non-Muslim Palestinian rights activists to ensure that the dates they're eating are not from the illegal Israeli settlements?
Israelis, instead of coming out and saying product of Israel, they are hiding the identity of the dates. Packages like this, you know, Al-Malik, you know, a Muslim name, Arabic writing, product of Palestine. But when you look, you realize it's a con, because there is no company importer or distributor attached to this.
This year's call to boycott Israeli dates subscribes to the mission of the Global Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Movement that works to end international support for Israel's oppression of Palestinians and pressure Israel to comply with international law.
We were in Britain number one importer of Israeli dates. Last year we informed everyone that we have become second, and this year we have become third. And at the same time, Palestinian dates are being sort of supported and imported more.
This Ramadan, when Muslims in Britain break their fast with dates, they'll be wise to ask themselves if the dates they're eating are helping ease the suffering of Palestinians, or are they going towards oppressing them? Saeed Purza, London.
A shock end to the week as British royal Prince Philip, the husband of Queen Elizabeth II, was pronounced dead on Friday. Just hours after the news broke, mourners began gathering to lay flowers for the late Duke of Edinburgh, who was the longest-serving consort in British history.
Following the death of such a prominent member of the royal family, British media, particularly the BBC, appear to have gone into whitewash overdrive, portraying the prince as some kind of charitable war hero, whilst totally glossing over his various disgraces, including his numerous racist outbursts and his support for colonialism.
Both headlines and government statements were awash with complimentary tributes. But British social media reacted very differently, with Black and Irish Twitter hashtags going viral, two groups competing to mock the royals' scandal-ridden legacy.
His record is incredibly checkered. He has indulged in numerous racist outbursts and has indeed been a champion of British colonialism.
He said, for instance, back in 2002, a group of Indigenous Australians on a visit to see them with the Queen, he asked them, do you still throw spears at each other?
The British monarchy represents everything bad in their history, and so quite understandably, they have a different viewpoint on his death and what it means.
He said, if you stay here much longer, you will all be slitty-eyed. That's what he told British exchange students who lived in Xi'an in 1986.
The prince had a bad habit of offending minorities, but also represented detested British imperialist values.
If we're going to swear an oath of allegiance to anybody, it should be an oath of allegiance to the people that elect us. We're all living in a democracy. We shouldn't be swearing an oath of allegiance, it seems to me, to a unelected monarchy.
150,000 COVID dead, 10 years of austerity, 120,000 of the most vulnerable and poor people dead. That's who I shed a tear from.
For now, the flag at the palace has been lowered, and on Monday, Parliament will honour the Duke with further tributes. But no matter how hard the establishment ignore it, the British royal legacy is tarnished. Robert Carter, London.
A joint commission session between Iran and the remaining signatories of the nuclear deal known as the JCPOA comes to an end in Vienna. Iran's lead delegate, Deputy Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, says Iran's demand is clear. It will only come back to full compliance with the agreement after the U.S. lifts sanctions imposed, reimposed, or relabeled following the U.S. withdrawal from the JCPOA. And Iran will also want to verify the sanctions lifting.
What we mean by verification is to see the effects of sanctions lifting in practice. So it is not enough for the U.S. to sign, you know, waivers or, I don't know, executive orders, whatever. Yes, they have to officially sign, but what matters for us is to see the effect of sanction lifting on the ground.
China's representative said the sides are narrowing down their differences. He said Beijing believes all the nuclear-related unilateral U.S. sanctions are illegal and should be lifted immediately to safeguard the JCPOA. The demand to lift all sanctions at once is a legitimate one, he said.
We think it's legitimate for them to lift it all at once, and it's an important issue.
But will they do it?
They have undertaken to do it. But we say that they must put it into action, turn their commitments into action.
Araghchi said he believes it is possible to get the job done sooner rather than later, but it depends on how willing and serious the other side is. After 3 days of intensive discussions within two working groups, the delegates agreed the talks are moving in the right direction. The Joint Commission will meet again on Wednesday amid hopes to maintain momentum. Homa Leski, Vienna.
Turkey.
Turkey has reported an unprecedented surge of daily coronavirus cases. The new infections stood at almost 55,000 on Wednesday, as the highest in the country since the outbreak of the pandemic last year. Turkish government plans to reduce the numbers during the upcoming holy month of Ramadan to welcome tourists again after the month. Turkish president said that he wants to see a significant reduction in the number of coronavirus infections by the end of Ramadan, as he announced last week that during the holy month, restaurants and coffee shops' work will be limited to takeout and delivery services only. Meanwhile, Turkey will continue to witness a daily curfew from 9 p.m. till 5 a.m. and total weekend lockdowns.
We aim to give a rest to our country during Ramadan and prepare it for better days after the Eid. If we could decrease the number of the cases to thousands, we will be able to catch the tourism season that is understood to be opened in May and the commercial activity that will be created by the tourism season.
Turkish Health Minister Fahrettin Koca said earlier that 75% of the new coronavirus cases in the country are from the more contagious variant detected in Britain. This as the country is still open for tourists who are not included in the curfew and lockdown measures. Some analysts believe the latest measures is the reason behind the sudden increase in the new cases.
We expected to see a spread of the virus amid the third wave. However, we didn't expect to see such high numbers, especially after we began public vaccination. Turkish government's trying to create a balance between people's health and economy. That's why it's trying to implement measures to contain the spread of the virus until at least 60% of the country is vaccinated.
Turkey is pressing ahead with its nationwide vaccination campaign, using the Sinovac and Pfizer-BioNTech's vaccine shots. So far, more than 10.55 million people have been given the first doses, and 7.41 million were given the second. Turkey's announcement of a nationwide lockdown during the holy month of Ramadan has created chaos, which is seen by many as the reason behind the increasing number of daily infections. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خداست، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanahu.
I invite you to listen to a short part of chapter 9 of the book Sirrussalat, The Secret of Prayer by Imam Khomeini. Chapter 9 entitled On the Secrets of the Time. From the starting of noon time, which shortened the daytime, hast thou not seen how thy Lord hath spread the shade, and if he will have made the sun its pilot? Chapter Furqan, verse 45. Up to the time that under the horizon it sets down, the time of the evening prayers, which are the main prayers, and when the sun reaches its end and the two times, noon and the evening, have arrived for praying. Though to the mystic's conduct both are prayers up to the primary and the secondary, verily those four parts are instead of another four.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Today we are with another program of Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio, and this is your host Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. We are here with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the religion of Islam. In one of his speeches, he mentions that Islam has come to unite all nations of the world, Arabs, non-Arabs, Turk or Persian, and to form a great ummah, namely the Islamic Ummah, so that those who seek domination over Muslim states and centers fail to do so due to the immense society that Muslims constitute from every group. Islam talks about mankind as a whole, human being as a whole. Islam talks about Ummah, being the Ummah. everyone has to play their role. Everyone has to do their job in order to make this Ummah united. And Islam has come with a central program, making or joining or gathering all these societies at one platform, and that is Islamic Ummah. The name of that platform is Islamic Ummah. That's what Imam Khomeini is also referring to. He says Islam has a plan to unite all nations and to make them Muslim Ummah. Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum. On the other hand, there are many people who are benefiting from the division of the Muslims, and these groups are made by ourselves. It's us who made these divisions. It's the human beings who have made these geographical, we can say, borders. There are many Muslim countries next to each other, but still the people who live in those countries, they cannot freely travel within the countries. And this is because we are following something which is not Islamic. We need to go back towards the Islam, and Imam says that if you live according to Islam, you will become one united nation. And that's what he called everyone while he was. And that's what it shows, that when Imam, at the level of being a leader of an Ummah, a leader of Muslim Ummah, he calls everyone for unity. That is because in the Quran, Allah says that وَاَعْتَسِمُوا بِحَبْلِ اللَّهِ جَمِيعًا وَلَا تَفَرَّقُوا. Grab the rope of Allah and do not disperse. Insha'Allah, may Allah give us tawfiq to learn the teachings of Quran and Ahlul Bayt and live according to those teachings, insha'Allah. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
U.S. President Joe Biden might not be building a physical border wall, but he is continuing to expand an infrastructure designed to deter migrants from crossing into the United States. Though he has distanced himself from former President Donald Trump's immigration policy, the Biden administration's plan would see the U.S. government lean into its reliance on technology at the southern border with Mexico, where Customs and Border Protection, CBP, is currently expanding one of the most ambitious surveillance systems ever created. Stay with us for part two of a three-part article written by Will Lennon, under the heading, U.S. Customs and Border Protection Plans Vast Expansion of Technology-Based Surveillance. The article has been taken from truthout.org website. The U.S. federal government is prepared to spend plenty of money on companies willing to work at the southern border with Mexico. Over the past 40 years, the border security budget has grown steadily, from $350 million in 1980 to over $23 billion by 2018. Competition for the funding is fierce. In 2020, 1,452 lobbyists worked on homeland security issues in Washington. 1,390 lobbyists worked on immigration. Enduro Industries has shelled out over $1 million to a lobbying firm called Invariant since 2017. They successfully lobbied Congress to expand the deployment of Enduro Industries' surveillance tower program, and in July 2020, the surveillance towers were declared a program of record. CBP, Customs and Border Protection, already has 60 towers at this point. They aim to have 200 by 2022. In the summer of 2020, Enduro Industries started a contract with Department of Homeland Security worth more than $60 million. The product service code for the contract reads, Construction of Electronic and Communications Facilities. The agreement is an indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity, or IDIQ contract, meaning Department of Homeland Security placed a preliminary baseline order and will have the opportunity to re-up annually until summer of 2025. The IDIQ contract could ultimately be worth up to nearly $250 million and yield 170 surveillance towers for Customs and Border Protection. The two smaller contracts that fall under the IDIQ are for prefabricated tower structures. The first surveillance tower contract has a start date in July of 2020. It shows 37 land surveillance towers and 3 maritime surveillance towers due to be delivered within a year. The second surveillance tower contract is dated September 2020 and consists of 76 surveillance towers along with replacement parts to be delivered within the year. A statement of work says Enduro Industries relies on Amazon Web Service, AWS, to centrally manage application and user access. Enduro Industries is identified in these documents as a small business. Palmer Luckey, one of Enduro Industries' co-founders, is an expert in sensor fusion from his days working in virtual reality. He previously founded the virtual reality gaming company Oculus, where he used sensor fusion to track players' movements, combining data from magnetometers, accelerometers, and gyroscopes. According to Palmer Luckey, Enduro Industries' surveillance towers use sensor fusion and artificial intelligence to create a three-dimensional model of large battle spaces. The surveillance towers combine data from radar, visual imaging, and thermal measurements. According to Customs and Border Protection, the towers can also communicate with each other, performing handoffs when something passes from the coverage area of one tower to that of another. Plus, they can spot activity in Mexico when groups might be staging a border incursion. Anduril Industries' ghost drones even gather data from the company's artificial intelligence system, which is called Lattice. At short distances, the ghosts are almost completely silent. A Customs and Border Protection endorsement on Anduril Industries' website describes Lattice as eyes in the back of my head. One border agent explained, once it integrates with a few pieces of technology, it will be completely different than what we've done in the past. Several Customs and Border Protection documents say Anduril Industries is obligated to provide a software development kit and an application programming interface API at the government's request. According to a procurement document, Customs and Border Protection wants technical data for the Lattice system so that the agency will be able to install and incorporate new sensor feeds into the Lattice tower, utilizing existing services and/or infrastructure. A Customs and Border Protection statement of work specifies that any human image labeling has to be done in the United States, and that faces must be blurred before labeling. The same document allows for a vendor to store non-blurred images for training purposes. Vendors are also authorized to use images to train artificial intelligence. According to Jack Paulson, a former Google research scientist who now runs the Technology Inquiry Watchdog Group, Customs and Border Protection could potentially use the Application Programming Interface, API, to go around Anduril Industries' software and gather data and images themselves. Jack Paulson said in an interview with Shadowproof, the blurring process could easily be circumvented if one of the application programming interface functions involved sampling from the raw surveillance feed. Customs and Border Protection is authorized to provide data to Department of Homeland Security's agency-wide biometric data management system, also known as HART. HART stands for Homeland Advanced Recognition Technology. Data stored in HART includes fingerprints and facial images, which can be used by the Agency for Facial Recognition. Advanced surveillance systems have been attempted at the border before Anduril Industries, most notably the Boeing-developed Secure Border Initiative, SBINet, project combines sensors and surveillance towers with the aim of reducing illegal immigration. The US government spent $1 billion on the system, which was riddled with bugs, before it was quietly scrapped back in 2011. Although the Boeing-developed Secure Border Initiative, SBINet, failed, experts on migration say that it did have an impact, and it's likely SBINet contributed to a spike in deaths among migrants trying to cross the border by pushing crossers into more deadly terrain. Driving migrants into rugged territory is a strategy the US government has employed for decades. US Immigration and Naturalization Services, INS, a forerunner of Department of Homeland Security, launched a prevention through deterrence strategy back in 1994. One aspect of the strategy was to push migrants from crossing at safe urban nodes of the border, like El Paso and San Diego, towards rougher terrain. Doris Meissner, then the INS commissioner, believed that under prevention through deterrence, geography would be an ally, and that migrants would soon quit trying to make the crossing once they saw how deadly it had become. It became common for the crossing to take days. Migrants often ran out of water and food partway through the trip and were sometimes relieved to be detained by the time Border Patrol caught up with them. A study published in the Journal of Borderland Studies used methods from archaeology and military science to measure how energy is expended by people crossing the border between the United States and Mexico. The study then compared those results to records showing the locations of migrant deaths. Researchers found relationships between the enforcement, specifically in the form of SBI net, routes taken by border crossers and fatalities. Avoiding areas where they would likely be intercepted or surveyed often sent migrants into regions where they were more likely to encounter dehydration, hypothermia, injury, and exhaustion. In a 2013 interview, one Border Patrol agent described migrants avoiding the SBI net system. The agent said, "They'd stay down in the mountains where it blocked the camera." That was the second part of Will Lennon's article. U.S. Customs and Border Protection plans vast expansion of technology-based surveillance. Tune in tomorrow for the third and concluding part of this series. Until then, goodbye and God bless.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of عمل انسان بعد از
self purification is the most significant
امامت یک اصل زنده است در تاریخ اسلام
امامت is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Javadi Amoli. Stay tuned.
شیطان الرجیم بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم رخداد تلخی که اخیراً جامعه بشری را
I seek refuge with Allah from Satan the outcast In the name of Allah the beneficent the merciful The bitter events which have lately engulfed humanity that is The uninvited coronavirus disease is in accordance with the absolute mercy of Allah.
چه بهتر که انسان به جایی برسد که جوامع دیگر در کنار سفره او بنشینند. این رب زدنی علمای رسول گرامی برای همه ما اسوه است.
How good would it be that humanity reaches a point where other societies sit down together at the tablecloth of food. This phrase, "My nourisher, give me knowledge," was given to us by the Honorable Messenger, who for us all is the best example. Allah in the Holy Quran, Surah 33, Ayah 11, orders us to obey the Messenger. Verily, in the Messenger of Allah, you have a good example. This is one. Another important point is the ascending towards and descending from Allah. In the Qaws Sa'ud, or ascend from the word towards Allah, and not Qaws Nuzul, or the descent from Allah to the word, Prophet repeatedly said, "My nourisher, give me knowledge." This happens because in the Qaws Nuzul, the Messenger contains everything where he comes from Allah and is the apparent manifestation of Allah. Now, it's better that in the first session of recitation of dua, the esteemed physicians and the top-level physicians must pray to Allah for the divine grace for the discovery of medicine, the discovery of cures for the salvation of humanity, whether the Eastern world or the Western world, whether a Muslim or a non-Muslim, and to have mercy upon all the people so that all of humanity benefits from you and your discovery of the cure. This is what we call the knowledgeable and scholarly dua, which is usually from the side of the experts.
امیدواریم ذات اقدس اله نزای ما را جامعه ما را مخصوصا بزرگوار و بزرگان پزشکی ما را که در خط مقدم.
We are hopeful that the exalted being of Allah protects our Islamic system, our society, and especially the greatly esteemed physicians who are on the front line of this danger, protects them from all harms and removes this disease and virus from humanity. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Javadi Amali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care, and goodbye.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.